Station. You guys have a nice flight. We'll see you back here.
Welcome to Roll Call, the 126 Air Refueling Wing podcast of the Illinois Air National Guard at Scott Air Force Base. Roll Call is the podcast focused on people, mission, and community. I am your host, Staff Sergeant Aaron Rodriguez. Our guest this week is the 126 Operations Group Commander, Colonel Jen Moore. She talks about her path to the 126th, her time with the Air Mobility Command, and also a favorite memory of flying with a special passenger in the jump seat. As for news, the election season is underway. The OSD Standards of Conduct Office released guidance on permissible political activities for both military and civilian service members. So if you have an interest in politics, please visit the OSD link in the show notes for more details. Additionally, you can find what's happening here around the wing in the new monthly publication, Wingtips. Check your email. You're going to find Wingtips there. And with that, the show continues with our co-host, Master Sergeant Brian Ellison, and our guest, Colonel Jen Moore.
Joining us on the Roll Call podcast, the commander of the 126th Operations Group, Colonel Jen Moore. Ma'am, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, I'm excited to chat with you.
So you just took over as commander of the operations group. Where were you before this?
Before this, I was the guard advisor to the AMC Inspector General. So I was hanging out with the AMC Inspector General team. It was a crazy... That's a very interesting job. And what I'll tell everybody out there is do not be afraid of the Inspector General. I went to that position under duress. I was like, oh my gosh, there's no way I am IG material. And then I got there and it was probably one of the best jobs I've had. Like it turned out to be an awesome opportunity. So everybody out there should not discount opportunities with IG.
Was that a full-time position?
It was. That's kind of why I took it. It was a full-time gig, full-time pay, you know. Well, and I had been a DSG for so long and balancing the civilian job with the military job. And then I had a taste of just having one job, and it was really nice. And so then they're like, well, you know, you could keep doing it if you want, but you got to join the IG team. And so I figured it was worth a try.
What'd you do before you – what'd you do while you were a DSG?
So I was DSG with the unit for most of my career, just
really?
Flying the line, yeah. But before the IG position, I was in A-10N. So I spent most of my career here, and then I actually, well, I was voluntold to go support the Global Thunder, one of those exercises, and I hung out with the TF-294 battle staff for this exercise, and I was introduced to the world of the IMA, which I didn't even know what an IMA was.
What is an IMA?
It's the Individual Mobilized Augmentee. And so they are basically part-time people that are assigned to active duty positions so that when the active duty person gets deployed, the IMA is supposed to be ready and trained to kind of backfill for specific jobs that are in the active duty. So AMC A-10N, the nuclear division, has a whole bunch of those types of positions because the nuclear mission is important.
Sure.
and they need help during exercises and stuff. And so they had a handshake deal with the unit over here that, hey, we need bodies during these exercises that know the nuclear mission. So like I said, I was kind of voluntold, like, hey, Jen, we really need you to go do this. And I was like, oh, this is actually really interesting. And this nuclear mission is really kind of fascinating. And they're like, well, do you want a job? And it kind of turned into, well, I don't know. What do deployments look like? You know, and at that point in the 126, we were really deploying a lot to the desert. And it was like going to LED again. And so I was like, I don't know, maybe it'd be fun to try this nuclear thing. And so I did that for a while. And then I joined the IG.
So what did you do as in a civilian job before you joined A-10N? You were DSG?
Well, I was an IMA, so it was technically a part-time position.
Oh.
But I was basically just, I was guard bumming, and I was on orders the whole time I was with them. So, but previous to that, I work, well, and I guess technically I'm still on military leave with Boeing.
Wow.
So I worked at Boeing as an engineer.
Wow. So, how long have you been on military leave with Boeing?
I think I'm going on 7 years now.
Wow. That is a great gig.
Yeah. Boeing is a great place to work. They have unlimited military leave. I'll just put it in a plug, but I've had great experiences working there. It's a great place to work.
So you are now the operations group commander. We're speaking with Colonel Jen Moore. Can you describe your leadership style in this new position?
I don't really know. I feel like you should ask the people that are working around me, you know, what they think. What I would like, what I would hope their responses would be, servant leader is what I would strive to do. I don't know. I feel like it's not about me. It's about the group, and it's about figuring out what they need and how to get them where they need to be. So that's what I'm hoping for. That's my goal.
You had a short survey.
Oh yes.
And you're looking into changing the culture. How are you hoping to change the culture, and how does a spork play into it?
Okay. Well, I'm really glad you asked this question, because I had some great advice from some mentors. And one of my favorite pieces of advice was that if you ever take command, one of the first things you should do is ask everybody for just to give you two words. And the first word is, how would you describe the culture of the organization today? And then the second question is, how would you just give me one word to describe the organization that you want to be a part of? And so I did that. Like, one of my first things that I did was to push this survey out to get these two words. And then we made word clouds. So the first one is, okay, that's a snapshot of where people think you are today in that cloud. And then the second one, though, is the more important, because that's where we want to be. So I took that word cloud, worked with you guys, thank you, in PA, to turn that into a word cloud that we put up as posters all over the OG. So now that serves as our roadmap for this is where we want to be. And because I included aircrew in the responses, we did have some fun words included, like spork, which I think is awesome, because a spork is a great utility utensil that they come in so handy. So I appreciate that that's part of our word cloud. One of the other fun things was garlic cheesy bread, which I myself very much enjoy garlic cheesy bread. So I think that's a great word to include. But the idea was, hey, what culture do you want to be a part of? And that can be kind of a guide for, all right, as we make decisions and the different tasks that we do, hopefully we're working towards that goal of, hey, if we work together, we can make that the culture of our group.
A spork is a multi-capable airman.
That is exactly right. Ace, multi-capable.
Yeah, ace, multi-capable.
Spork is a great representation of that. I didn't even think about that. But I did go out and get a big bunch of sporks and threw them in the break room so that everybody had access to a spork. So, yes.
Why'd you decide to join the National Guard? What made you say, I'm going to join the National Guard?
Well, that's also an interesting question. I did ROTC to pay for school. And the year that I graduated, they had too many lieutenants. They didn't have enough training. And so that was one of those years that they told all of us coming up, they said, hey, if you can find a Guard or Reserve unit that will accept an untrained lieutenant, we'll release you from your ROTC commitment and you can, it was crazy. Instead of doing 4 years of active duty, you can do 6 years with a Guard or Reserve unit. And so at that time in my life, I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm planning on going active duty. I've got this all lined up. And if I take this option, I'm going to have to put together a resume and find a real job. And, you know, but my dad actually, one of the bigger influences in my life, he said he had retired from active duty and was working for a reserve unit and said, Jen, I will get you into this reserve unit. He's like, if you change your mind and think, oh, I wish I would have explored that option, there's no going back. But if you join the Guard or Reserve and then decide you wish you would have gone active duty, the active duty will take you all day long. So he's like, so why don't we try and see if we can find something? And so I took my dad's advice for once in my life, and I found it. And I actually started out with a 932nd right here at Scott. So yeah, it was crazy. So I've got a weird path of military background, I guess.
Where'd you go to ROTC at?
Notre Dame.
Oh.
Yes, the Fighting Irish. Go Irish. The detachment there, DET-225, is amazing. And I feel like I had one of the most amazing college experiences of anyone. So I'm very blessed, thankful that I had that great opportunity.
And what'd you study at Notre Dame?
math.
Oh.
I'm a total nerd at heart. I think that math is beautiful. It's so simple. You learn the rules, you play by the rules, and you win. Like, there's no, you know, there's no if then, you know, no, 2 + 2 = 4 every time, all the time. There's no exceptions. You learn the rules, you play, and you win. And so I really appreciate that about it's so truth and fact-based, and, you know, and so much of life is not that way, that it's nice to have an element of the world that is, you know, simple.
You make math sound so easy.
Well, yeah.
If I could remember all those rules, it would be, I remember PEMDAS, parentheses, exponents,
yes.
Multiply, divide, add, subtract.
Okay.
I can remember that.
That's a good start, you know?
I have a liberal arts degree, not public policy. My public policy is my master's degree. My undergraduate is political science.
So I took
a liberal arts math class to pass.
Well, but that's like, we're right. There's so many people and subjectivity involved with, oh my gosh, a human made a decision that nobody understands, and that has all these impacts across all the, you know, so I find that fascinating. The understanding and that, you know, I don't know. But yes, math, there's a lot of rules to learn and remember, but the, you know.
So what made you choose the 126th Air Refueling Wing?
Well, honestly, the location was a big part of it. Working for Boeing in St. Louis, that was a draw. And honestly, the tanker mission was kind of a big part of it as well. My dad flew C-130s. I knew I wanted to pursue a different airplane just because I wanted my dad to be able to have, that's his airplane. And, you know, and honestly, I met Scott Fitzgerald on a flight. I was flying down from Chicago to St. Louis for something and sat next to him and found out that the Chicago Guard was moving. And I was intrigued and I, you know, oh my gosh, I'm right near, well, I was stationed at Scott in the 932nd at the time. And so it all kind of fell together.
Where'd you grow up at?
Oh, I'm a military brat.
Oh.
So all over. I was born at Abilene. My dad was stationed at Dyess. We lived at Yokota for a while, where my sister was born. Then it was back to Scott. And then we lived in Germany for a while. And then back to Scott again. And then my dad retired. And he moved up to the Minneapolis Guard, the Guard base that has the reserve unit. And I've been at Scott my whole career, but grew up all over the place. I went to high school at O'Fallon, though, so I'm a Panther at heart. You know, go Panthers.
So you were at the 932nd.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a pilot at the 932nd?
No, I was an executive officer, which was basically, I was looking for any job that any Guard or Reserve unit would have because I didn't have any AFSC assigned. I was a commissioned lieutenant with no AFSC. So it's kind of an awkward. And the whole thing was all of the initial training slots were filled. And so, but as we know, right, the Guard and Reserve get a certain percentage of those spots. So the idea was you find a Guard or Reserve unit that can get you into one of their slots so that you're not just, you know, hanging out in La La Land with no AFSC for, you know, too long.
Right.
So the 932nd said, well, we've got an available exec position if you want to go to comm school. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. That sounds like a useful skill for, you know, anywhere. And so it was actually working for the wing commander as his exec on drill weekends. I would show up 1 weekend a month and be the exec. And he asked me about flying and I was like, oh yeah, I would love to be a pilot. I didn't want that commitment. And then this option presented itself. So pilot wasn't conducive to that, but I would love to. And so he kind of got me into, well, you know, the Guard and Reserve will just hire pilots if you want to find a gig. And so I was going to pursue flying with the 932nd. And then I found out about the Chicago Guard moving down and it was like, oh, that tanker mission sounds pretty amazing. Maybe I should look into that. So
how soon after, how long were you at the 932nd before you joined the 126th?
Only 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was a short little stint. Cause I was commissioned in 98 And then, you know, the unit moved down in 2000. So when in the course of that move, they did a lot of hiring boards and everything. And so I was on one of those boards and got picked up.
So when you began your career, did you ever think you'd be the operations group commander?
Not in a million years. I was happy as a clam, as a part-timer, and I actually turned down opportunities to come out here full-time because I really enjoyed my job at Boeing. It was so I thought I was just going to be a part-timer for my whole career, and I don't know. God has some kind of a weird plan, and I ended up not doing that. So, but if you had asked me 10 years ago if I ever thought I would be the OG, I would have laughed at you. And I'm sure there are people in the OG who would also agree with that. But yeah, I don't know. I think that the fact that I made it here is just a testament to anything can happen. And, you know, don't ever close the doors. So I almost didn't do Air War College. I was like, why would I do that? That's going to be a waste of time. And luckily I had some good influences in my life and some good mentors and some good friends. And it was like, listen, you're eliminating possibilities and options by not doing PME, right? So help yourself and get it done because you never know what will happen. And so I hope that people who see me in this position can see that anything can happen.
When did you do that PME? Did you wait till like the last minute, like many of us do?
I kind of did. I started it at one point and then it was like, oh, I'm never going to be able to finish this. And then, you know what? What really helped me get it done was I found a friend, right? I had a partner and we would meet for lunch and we would go over stuff. And then it almost turned into a little bit of a competition, like, oh, I'm going to get this done before you. Uh-huh. And so then that's how I ended up getting through it. But yeah, I should have started it a lot sooner than I did. So, but it was just one of those, once I saw an actual opportunity. So while I was in A10N, the IMA colonel position, the Colonel Poole, who was in that job, he pulled me aside and said, hey, Jen, you could take my job when I leave, but you got to get your PME done. And so then it was like, okay. And he mapped out his timeline and said, you better have it done, you know? And so that was my kick in the pants.
What's been some memorable moments for you in the military?
Oh my gosh. I think my favorite trip was, it was a lift. We went up to Minnesota, picked up some F-16s and took them to Red Flag at Nellis. And there was Space A available and my family came on that trip. And I was pregnant at the time, which I was like, I was very clearly pregnant and showing. And so it was like one of those kind of, it was funny because there were a few people that were like, wait, you're the pilot? And I was like, yeah. And, you know, but my oldest child, I think he was three or four at the time. And we brought his car seat along, strapped him in the jump seat. He got to watch me fly. It was an awesome trip.
That's got to be indelible for your oldest.
Oh, well, it's...
And influential.
Yes. The best part of the story is we were trying to take off and the winds were out of limits on the long runway. And we sat there for so long waiting for the winds. He fell asleep in the jump seat, like on takeoff. And it was like, oh my gosh, wake him up. Like this is, you know, and you think as a mom, you're never going to wake up your kids. But... So there were some very interesting, memorable things. And like, you know, Vegas is not necessarily the best location for small children. So we spent a lot of time at the hotel pool and not, you know, out on the strip. But it was an awesome trip.
Who have been some role models in your life?
Oh, gosh.
You mentioned your dad.
I know. My dad, definitely. I've had...
What rank did your dad make?
He made it to lieutenant colonel, and so it's a little bit of a family, you know, there's a little bit of, yeah.
Rank your dad.
But he's okay. There were a couple of people at Boeing that really taught me a lot about leadership and leading people. One of them was a graduated KC-135 squadron commander, and he always had great words of wisdom, just in general terms. And I appreciated having him in my life because I could connect with him at my civilian job, but I could get advice about my military job from somebody who had kind of been there and done it before. And he was a great influence and helped me understand that I could do some things that maybe I didn't think that were possible. And I had some really, one of my favorite bosses at Boeing was just really great about allowing me to do things in my way and not have to apologize for, well, if you want to go part-time, that's okay. And, you know, that's an option, and you shouldn't think anything less of people who are part-time. And, I don't know. So I guess I've had some great Boeing leaders and some great, one of my favorite mentors came out of the Women in Aviation group, and she was a great resource for just, hey, I'm having another child here. How is that going to impact things? And just being able to talk to somebody who had been through it before. She had been a military pilot for, you know, and had at that point was retired. And so just hearing her experiences and how things have evolved even since she had gone through. So I think just finding people that you can connect with is really important, because being able to bounce things off of and say, hey, I'm thinking about making a turn here. Is that a good decision or not? And talking to somebody who maybe has already been around that corner, or, you know, maybe say, nah, you might not want to take that path. You might want to try a different thing. I think that's really important. And I've been very grateful and blessed to have kind of a good mix of people in my life that I can turn to. So, and I'll just put in a plug for those staff positions that I took at AMC, really helped me develop that bench as well. And going and visiting other units and doing, you know, I went on a bunch of NSAVs, the nuclear staff assistant visit, at other units, and just meeting people that way and developing, a network was amazing. And that also in the IG, going on inspections and just crossing paths with different people was a great way to kind of build and meet other people who have done things similar to you, but that are outside the unit. So it was a great.
What words of encouragement would you have for people that may be considering getting out or deciding whether to take that next position?
I guess I would encourage people to think about their individual situation and what they're capable of and what's best for them. I always tell people, nobody takes care of you but you. So that has to be first in your mind, is that you have to take care of yourself and do what's right for you and your family. At the same time, oh my gosh, we're in a situation in the world right now that we need good people serving in the military. And everybody has encountered, you know, bad bosses and, you know, crummy experiences at work. And so if you're part of the fix and the solution, then we need you. And the people under you need you to be there to help make the positive environment that we need. Because I don't know what the right word there is, things escalate, you know, in the world, it's just going to become more important for us to have good people serving so that we can have, you know, the best experience if, God forbid, we have to go to war.
Sure, sure. All right. That is the commander of the 126th Operations Group, Colonel Jen Moore. Anything else to add, ma'am?
I guess I would love to weave in my little cheesy acronym that I came up with.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like choose your ARCT. So in the flying world, in the tanker world, ARCT is your air refueling control time. And that's the time that you show up for the refueling. And so it's a nice little acronym. But I think that ARCT can mean things that we have control over, things that we can choose. So A is for attitude. We all have control over the attitude that we choose to, you know, come to work with. And if we all would make good choices and choose to have a good attitude, think about how great that would be to work with everybody choosing a good attitude. R is for respect. I think we can choose how much respect we show to other humans. And I espouse that all humans deserve respect. And in a professional organization, we owe that to each other to have some level of respect for everybody that we work with. We can choose communication. And for C is for how do we communicate? Do we communicate openly, honestly? Or, you know, you can choose how much and how often you communicate. And so make good choices with communication. And then T is for trust. We can choose who we trust and how much we trust them. And so one of my favorite mentors from the Inspector General world would always say, attribute positive intent. And I think that goes to the trust. I think that when you go into a situation and assume that people have positive intent and want to do good things, that makes the whole encounter just better. And so trusting people, even maybe when you've been burned a few times, it's still better to allow that trust so that you can have a more effective relationship and get more things done. So I just choose your ARCT is a little thing that I have come up with. This little cheesy, I know, but I don't know. I like to be a little cheesy. So thanks for letting me slip that in there. But yes, I don't have anything else that I am excited to talk about.
All right. Thanks, ma'am. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Department of the Air Force leaders spoke at the Global Air and Space Chiefs Conference in London, where U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff General David Alvin described the meaning of collective agility.
What does that mean? It's a combination of all these attributes. One or two of them might be interesting, but it's a combination of all of them. You can still generate power. You can still take a punch. You can still move. You can get your balance. And some of these you can see, Rich was talking about a little bit, how about a balance of high-low capability? How about the flexibility to move from one domain to another? How about the coordination that comes with command and control? These things relate and they translate very well to what we do in air and space power. And so the idea of solving for agility has become an obsession of mine.
Chief of Space Operations General Chance Saltzman also spoke on the importance of collaboration.
The United States is proud to be a part of an ever-growing group of allies and partners, many of them in the room today. A group of partners that are all working together to increase resiliency, redundancy, and interoperability of all space-based capabilities to enhance our collective security.
Saltzman also describes how integrated deterrence can help maintain international security.
If we do this right, the net result is a condition of deterrence that maintains a safe, secure, and stable international environment, which is the ultimate goal of our national security policy.
The U.S. Air Force, Space Force, and the Royal Air Force leaders also renewed their shared vision statement on combined air and space power during the conference, reaffirming the long and historic partnership between the two nations. You can view full presentations by visiting the Air and Space Power Association website. That's your look around the Air Force. I'm Staff Sergeant Milton Hamilton.
I just want to give some thanks to Colonel Moore for coming on to the show. We appreciate her in the wing. We appreciate her energy and also her leadership as well. On a separate note, if you are struggling with thoughts of suicide or you know someone that's in a crisis, please call the military crisis line at 988. Again, that's 988 and then press 1. You can find all of our social media links on Linktree. That is at linktr.ee/126ARW. If you're watching YouTube, you can also download the episode to your favorite podcast app. All right, thank you so much for listening to Roll Call, the 126th Air Refueling Wing podcast focused on people, mission, and community. I am your host, Staff Sergeant Aaron Rodriguez. Adios.